I am excited to be joined by today's guest. He's been on a couple times, and it is the offensive coordinator now at Kansas, Brent Dierman. Brent, great to have you here. Great to see you and be sitting down with you live to record this at National Conference.
Absolutely. Good to be here and get to talk with you in person. You think about the 3-4 year journey that we've been through over the last few years of doing podcasts, and get to come to the National Conference here. It's been amazing.
Yeah, well, what's neat for me as I look back on it, like, there's been this progression for Brent Dierman as we've had you join us on the podcast. You know, thinking back to the very first days, I remember, you know, I just had Rick Jones on. Rick now is at Missouri and took a position there. Was at Greenwood High School in Arkansas. It's actually still one of my favorite episodes I ever done. Is the first one with Rick, and just an incredible coach. And you know, I remember last year, 19, won the Power of Influence Award from the AFCA. And I'll tell you what, there couldn't be a better award for that guy, right? But just an influential coach. And that's kind of how I found him. Like, 3 or 4 guys said, you got to talk to Rick Jones. And then Rick Jones says, you got to talk to Brent Dierman. I'm like, well, man, everybody steered me right with Rick, so this Brent Dierman's guy has got to be really good. So that's how we kind of hooked up the first time on the podcast. And you know, your episodes, for one, have done incredible. I always said I can't remember if it was, I think it was the second time you joined us, that episode is one of the most listened to, where you were talking about RPO. And for our listeners, I'll link all of episodes with Brent there. But it's been fun to watch you in your trajectory, in your career as a coach, and so excited for you last year when you made that move to Kansas as the analyst. And then I'm watching during the season, and holy cow, he is the offensive coordinator now at Kansas. And, you know, see you out there and little video clips of you waving the wheat and all that stuff. And just really excited for you to see how your career is taking off.
You know, absolutely. It's been unreal. You know, you mentioned Rick to begin with. Rick is a very close friend of mine. I'd say he's in my 5 guys coaching circle that we all kind of lean on. And Rick has been huge in my career, helps me out big time with program stuff, with off the field stuff, just an awesome human being. And you look back at our journey, and I can really talk of how we've changed RPO wise in the last 3 or 4 mm-hmm. years, and how every time we talk, we kind of go through how we've done things a little bit different, of how we make changes and how we've tweaked a few things. And it all goes back to one of the guys that I talk about in my talk today is the players I've had. When you've got players that kind of help invest into your system, and had a quarterback at Arkansas Tech named Ty Reasoner that was a genius that made everything right. And he was a big part of what I've become too as a coach, because he was so smart and he could fix things. And man, it's just been an unreal journey, and the Lord's blessed me and brought me to where I'm at Kansas now. And 2 years ago I'm at Arkansas Tech, and a year ago I'm at Bethel, and now I'm the OC at Kansas. It's an unreal feeling.
I'm going to say, like, we just have to keep having you on, because...
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, every time I talk to you, I'm in a better spot. So, I love being in Kansas. I love Lawrence. It's a great college town. So, I could see me and my family being there for a long time, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an exciting time for you guys. You know, certainly was, like I said, neat to see you going and, you know, and have a great debut as an offensive coordinator. But, you know, you talk about that piece, like... You know, the evolution of these. I think that was the title. One of our episodes was the evolution of the RPO. And, you know, part
ended
of that
up being the title of the book, by the way.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Which I'll put that link in the show notes as well. Incredible book that Coach put together on RPO. But the game evolves, right? The guys on the other side, they're not dumb. I mean, they're figuring out, here's how we're going to stop this or that. So it's about just staying ahead, right? I mean, I don't think in football anymore you necessarily go out year to year and say, I'm going to do everything the exact same way again. You learn things, and it might be little things that, you know, to, you know, the casual viewer of football maybe not notice, but, you know, some of those nuances of technique or adjustments to scheme or how you might coach things up, those certainly change. And, you know, so surface level things might look the same, but it's going to change. And you want that process where you can give feedback. And I think you brought something important. It's always important to me was the players being a part of that process. You know, when we revamped our offense somewhere around 2010, those guys were with us along every step of the journey. So as we were doing some new things, you know, especially spring ball, was just sitting down and having those honest conversations about, you know, how this technique worked for you, or those guys not feeling like they were going to get jumped on if they suggested, like, coach, what if we did it this way? You know, this happened to me in practice today. This is how I handle it. Yeah, you're right. That's the coaching point now. So that's the fun part about, you know, coaching ball, I think, is a lot of that stuff that just happens on the practice field in the meeting room.
Absolutely. You've got to be able to evolve. And that was kind of the thought process with that book that we came out and put together about 3 years ago. And to look back at the book and see how much we've changed since even the book. I had an old coach one day tell me that there's two types of trees in the forest. Trees are either growing or they're dying. And I kind of view coaching the same way. Yeah. You're either growing and you're getting better and you're evolving, or you're going to start dying if you stay where you're at. So we're always trying to find new tweaks to things, but still stay who we are. And I think that's a big key to our success, is we still stay who we are. We still stay to who we say we want to be. We may just change how we open. We may change our mesh point. We may change how we fit the blocking scheme of things, or change the route. But always looking for ways to get better, always looking for ways to tweak things, and letting the players be a part of that, especially in spring ball. You know, in fall camp, you're kind of set.
Yeah.
But spring ball is a great chance to go out there and play around a little bit, go out there and let the players have a little bit of input, and it makes them buy in a little bit more, too, to know that they have a little bit of say-so into installation of new things.
Yeah. I can tell you, just thinking of spring ball, because it's that learning environment. I mean, there's the game at the end of the spring, but there's no test at the end of the week that puts the pressure on the learning process. And, you know, I can remember something we did with a pass concept at one of the colleges I was at. I mean, the kid completely screwed up his assignment, right? He did the wrong thing. And then we went back and we're watching film, and all of us noticed, like, whoa, did you see that? Did you see how that affected the linebacker? And then it became something we did. You know, but that's good, though. Like, those kids, when, you know, you certainly want to perform it right all the time and learning, but sometimes they show you some things that you weren't thinking about either.
Yeah, you change the way you teach things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I talked about a thing today where my quarterback was pre-snap flashing to his pre-snap side. And I never taught that. And got into the meeting room that day and said, hey, what are you thinking right here? This is a pre-snap side. You just got to catch and throw. And him coming back to me and giving feedback saying, coach, I knew that I could get that Sam linebacker to fit his gap a little bit harder if I just gave a flash fake. And now I'm teaching it. So to have kids that, I mean, they're playing it. They're out there. They're doing it. And we're just holding a pencil and drawing it. So to listen to their feedback, to listen to the things that they see out there on the field, just makes us better, makes the scheme better, makes us better coaches sometimes.
Yeah. You know, what I enjoy about any time you've joined us, Brent, even, you know, you going out there and, you know, putting your stuff out there for coaches, is you kind of take the attitude of, you're going to see it anyway. It's on film. There's nothing to hide from it. I mean, I really appreciate the fact that even as you've grown and the opportunities for you have put you in, you know, some high-profile jobs, that you're still out here willing to give to these coaches. I didn't get to, you know, I popped in the beginning and waved to you, and then I came at the end, and you were just inundated with some great questions. I was just so impressed of, you know, the answers you were giving. You were not giving clinic talk, like, just sharing with these guys.
Yeah, you know, I'm all about guys that want to get better. And, you know, I said it in that meeting that day that I, as a young coach at 22, 23, I go to a clinic expecting to get a ton of knowledge, come in, I'm green, I've got my notebook ready to go, and the first two clinic sessions I sat in was full clinic talk and didn't really get anything out of it, and I made a kind of commitment to myself that if I ever was ever in a role where I could share, that I was going to be the coach that shared as much as I can, that, you know, for me, everything's on tape now, everything's out there for the world to see, so there's no reason for me to try to hide it, there's no reason for me to you know, act like we used to act in the early 2000s or late 90s, where you had to get a copy of the VHS tape from somebody. with everything being on the internet, everything's visible to see. There's no reason for me to act that way. So I'm gonna share my knowledge, because someday that guy's gonna share knowledge with somebody else too. So I think we've got to lean on each other as coaches to constantly be making each other better.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, that attitude is what helps our profession and what helps grow this game.
Like, nothing, you know, I've got to do.
Yeah, it's
I got to keep growing. So if I keep in 3 years, if I'm still teaching it the same
back,
way,
yeah,
then I'm gonna get beat. So it forces me too to keep trying to grow as well. So it's kind of a personal thing for me that if I share this, I better figure something else out for the 3 years from now.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is as you think through, like when you're gonna take it outside of what you do, you know you're gonna get questions and. Really, as you put together these presentations or you write an article or you write a book, it forces you to really think about what am I doing and why, and revisit some of that, because you fall into that trap. You come in, you put an offense, it's 3 years later and we're still doing the same thing. If you're not asking a lot of why, it'll end up biting you. Might not be right away, but eventually people are going to catch up to what you're
doing. You're right, and a lot of that why goes to kind of scheming every week.
Right.
You know, some of the RPOs I talked about today, I'm not going to run every week. Some of them are coverage-specific RPOs or front-specific RPOs. So, you know, there's some things I keep in that back pocket and don't share with everybody, but you're going to scheme up certain looks. You're going to scheme up certain routes that are based off of that week. So, you know, teaching what I taught today is what I told them guys is, I'm going to teach you how to fish instead of giving you the fish. I'm going to teach you how we develop fishing for us, how we develop RPOs that fit us. But then every week you got to kind of go in and scheme up that team you're playing.
Right. We can't see diagrams or video here, but, you know, let's get into some of that sharing of what you did here and what you talked about. Your topic was C and D gap RPO, and, you know, that part of it I think is most helpful is what you just said. We're going to teach you how to fish. So teach us how to fish.
You know, one of the things that we have really want to is anytime I'm reading a C-gap player, which is most time a defensive end or an overhang outside linebacker, anytime I'm reading a C-gap player, I never stay in the pocket to throw RPOs anymore, because that's when you get your quarterback hurt. That's when if he's reading a third-level player and you're not blocking the C-gap, that's when that defensive end can mesh charge and blow your quarterback up.
Right.
So if he's reading a C-gap, it's triple option. It's the old veer. It's running out with, instead of a pitch, he's got a bubble, or he's got a go ball, or he's got a flat route. We give him some type of a third option to it, so it's the triple option. And then in the D-gap reads, we're going to tell him, hey, we're going to handle from C-gap to C-gap blocking, and you handle the D-gap space, no matter if it's the Sam linebacker or could be the free safety in this new robber coverage that TCU, Gary Patterson's kind of come up with now. He's going to read the field safety, or in the boundary, I'm going to read the corner or the boundary safety. So we're going to read the D-gap player. And on the D-gap player reads, we're going to stay on the spot. Because he's not forced off the spot with a C-gap in rushing him, he can now stay on his spot to make those throws. So teaching quarterbacks gaps, teaching quarterbacks the why of, here's why we're going to run out of it. Here's why you can stay in the pocket. And then the last thing we kind of went into today is the gap scheme RPOs, which a lot of people are scared of.
Right.
They're scared of pulling guards and running RPOs because of weakness of the protection. But we teach our quarterback the weakness in the protection. We teach our quarterback we're taking a backside gap and adding it to the front side, which is great for the front side run, but it sucks for the backside of the pass pro. So if they bring any pressure off the backside edge, here's what you've got to do. You've got to fix it by either handing it, getting in the way of it, or by making this hot throw, making this slant throw off the backside edge. Or the way I've told guys now is I teach RPO protections the same way I teach empty pass pro. The quarterback better understand where he's going to get hit from.
Uh-huh.
So that's really benefited us, and I think a lot of those guys today learned something out of that.
Yeah, well, a lot to chew on there. So let's take a step back, and I guess so we can get an example of it. The C-gap in moving them out of the pocket. Just talk us through a basic C-gap RPO.
You know, one of the ones that's probably most known is one I got when I was at Auburn. In 2013, we're playing Alabama. And late in the game, we run a zone read where we push the inside zone to the field with our O-lineman. And into the boundary, our fullback arc releases or veer releases, and his job's to block scraper to safety.
Where's he lined up?
He could be lined up to the field or the boundary. To him, it's the same play. I just change his alignment in the formation.
Gotcha.
His assignment doesn't change, right, though, for that play. So he could start in the boundary, or he could start to the field and come to the boundary and look like split zone. So he's going to arc release the end, and his eyes go in the box to the scraping Will linebacker. Will linebacker doesn't come out of the box, then he can work up to the safety. The quarterback's going to ride read the C-gap player, who most of the time is going to be the end. It could be that overhang bandit or jack that some people are calling that guy. If he squeezes a run, the quarterback pulls and attacks the corner into the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And if the corner falls off that X receiver, we're going to make a go ball throw, which we did in 2013.
Yeah, I remember
to beat Alabama that
year. Yeah.
Or if he gets a cover two, the safety gets over the top of that go route, that X receiver is going to sit it on the sideline at 10 yards. That way we're always right. But either way, the quarterback's throwing off of the corner is his third read in that triple option. So that is our base install C-gap read.
Yeah, so a couple things. The path coming out of that, you said he's going to the corner. How do you coach that up? Because if you're thinking if you get off that path maybe a step and a half, you're probably in a little bit of trouble. So how are you coaching him up as far as the aim point he's going to on his pass?
His initial aiming point is going to go through the hip of the tailback. So the initial side of things, it's running the veer. It's running zone read. So he's coming right through the hip of that tailback, and then he, wherever the corner may be, is his then trajectory. So if you get a trap corner, that ball first off should be coming out right now off of the pull, but he's going to run right at that corner. If the corner's bailing, then he turns into a run because the corner's bailing. So his path will initially be off the back through his hip, but then it changes to where the corner is playing us, how he attacks it.
So a couple things there. Let's go over the legal issues of this play. So the guys down the field, and I heard you give this answer to a coach who asked you that question, but the guys down the field, right? Making sure that you are not beyond that 3-yard limit.
Yes.
How is that coached up?
We spend a lot of time and effort teaching stay on double teams. So instead of teaching your line to be soft or not working upfield as much, we teach it another way by saying stay on the double team until the backer shows to you. So we do not come off the double to go vertical. We stay on the double and uproot it until the vertical comes to us, is how we've coached up the front. That way it fixes the RPO thing. I know that there's some people that put a tag on things that let the O-lineman know don't go downfield or something like that, but we don't want to teach them to be soft.
No.
We don't want to teach them to slow down. So a phrase that I've heard that I actually got from J.B. Grimes at Auburn is he used to tell guys, we want to uproot a fire hydrant. So we're going to stay on that 3, we're going to stay on that 4-I, we're going to stay on that double until that backer comes down to us. Well, that backer's not going to come down to us deeper than 3 yards. If he stays at depth, there's no reason for us to come off that double team. And in college football, how often you see a double team get past 3 yards?
Right.
You're rarely uprooting a 300-pounder past 3 yards, so it ends up fixing itself out. And I think in my last 4 years, I've had a lineman downfield call 3 times on us. So
yeah.
When you look at the efficiency of it, it's not worth us changing the way we're doing it,
right,
with only getting those 3 calls.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that the danger of any time you put a tag onto, I think RPO or even play action, you get a different mentality and demeanor out of that offensive lineman rather than just having him block. It's the difference between, you know, a lower hat or lower pet level or aggressive step off the line. And, you know, we did it the same way. And I tell him, like, same thing. Just stay on that longer, let him come to you. And if you kick his butt downfield, then it's on me. I'll take it. Like,
yes,
that's a good penalty to have. I'll just go back to running the football.
Absolutely.
So, and we did have it called on us because that was essentially it. It wasn't the uncovered guy going and standing 3 yards downfield doing nothing but getting us a penalty. It was a physical double team driving a guy down the field, which now, I mean, whether it's RPO or play action, you want that because it's going to make those guys fit their run game.
Yes, and you just take that on you as a coach, and you say, hey, guys, that penalty's on me.
Exactly.
You don't change. You keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I heard, you know, a podcast, Urban Meyer was talking about that exact thing. Like, he said, I can't coach my guys to play aggressive and then get mad at them when there's a penalty because they were playing aggressive. And as a coach, you just say, that's mine.
Yes.
We'll take it. So the next part of it, as I'm looking at it, is your fullback. And if that ball comes out and he's blocking, so how do you avoid a call there?
Be honest with you, because of the play, let's go through all the scenarios that this could happen. His first job is to block the scraping linebacker. Well, if they do any form of a squeeze scrape, good linebackers are going to attack downhill more. So that wheel backer will scrape hard and will be less than the 3-yard window.
Right.
So the scrape backer fixes itself. If he happens to move on to the safety, if the scrape backer stays in the box where he's going to get the safety, any look where the safety triggers downhill, the corner better not fall off either. So that ball's probably not being thrown. So we're blocking the safety and the corner staying high.
Yep.
If they give us any type of two-read look where the safety stays high and the corner does trigger, the fullback never blocks the safety because he stayed high the whole time. So in defensive football, if the defense does the way they're supposed to do it, the fullback's going to always be right and not be downfield blocking.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
I've never had – we've all of our three calls – be honest with you, they've all been on the QB, to be strictly honest with you, because the QB
made the wrong decision.
Yeah. QB forced something late that he shouldn't have done. But we've never had it because the fullback was the one doing the downfield blocking.
So then the other question I had was about your X on that go route, or if they're showing two where he's sitting down on that. How are you coaching that up? What's he looking at to make that decision?
He's got a mandatory outside release, which everybody in our profession, you know, calls that a more.
Yep.
Right? He's going to get outside release in the corner, and his eyes are on the safety. He's running a go unless the safety takes it away. The corner means nothing to him because the corner's on the QB. That's his triple option read.
Right.
So as soon as that X gets his release, his eyes go to the inside safety. The inside safety stays on the hash or comes down, he keeps running. If the safety hard tries to get over top of him, it's the only time he'll expand that thing and sit on the sideline at two.
So, Coach, then the D-gap RPO, you know, you gave us an overview of that, an example of the D-gap.
One of our top ones, our famous one, is we're going to run split zone. We run double slants to the field. We run a glance or a bang eight post in the boundary.
Yep.
Once again, teaching the quarterback, because we're in a split zone play up front, we're going to push the zone to the field, and the O-line is going to handle from C-gap to backside B. The fullback coming backside on that split zone is going to handle whoever fits the backside C, which most cases it's the end or the bandit. So we teach our quarterback, his job is the field D pre-snap and the boundary D-gap player post-snap. The only look that could change this that we've taught our quarterback is if we get a blitzer off the front side edge where the Sam linebacker's standing on the front side deacon. Our O-line will then make a push, a fan, a plus, whatever call they make, they handle it. So he just fixes the apex or the distance D-gap. As soon as it becomes an immediate threat, the O-line fixes it. And that's when we throw the double slants. The inside slant is thrown for pressure. The outside slant is thrown for if it's open. So if I get an apex, the old apex cover four, we're throwing the outside slant. If I don't love either of those slants, I just go to my boundary D-gap ride read. And there's one or two guys they're going to put in the boundary D-gap. It's going to be the corner or the boundary safety. If they put one of those two guys in that boundary fit, we're going to throw that glance or seven-step slant is essentially what it is, throw. If they late fit it, then we hand it off, and the quarterback has handled both overhangs, and we've got numbers in the box. Instead of, you know, I know a lot of the old school 10 personnel RPO was based off of numbers.
Right, right.
Because we can get in any formation, I don't ask him to do numbers because the numbers are going to change based off the personnel or the formation.
Mm-hmm.
So we give him a space. We give him a gap. That way, I could call it out of 10 personnel spread RPOs. I could call 21 personnel RPOs. and his rule's not going to change.
Right. It makes it simple for him. It kind of takes that burden of counting in the box.
Absolutely. And sometimes I don't have a cue that can count to seven, so that helps out.
Then, you know, the other one you mentioned is the gap scheme RPO. And, you know, I think whether you are running RPO or you are running play action and you pull a guard, you pull somebody, they're triggering decisions much quicker. Yeah.
So here's how we teach that problem is the old school math teacher in me tries to figure out ways to teach, tries to figure out ways to create formulas. And here's how I teach the quarterbacks there. We are taking a backside gap and adding it to the front side. So we are doing a subtraction and an addition. And by teaching it that way, it's easy for them to see there's a backside problem because we are losing a guy over here. So anytime we lose a guy, we're on a pulling play, means that there is a what we call a hot gap. Means if right. they bring a backside pressure, it will hit me on any late pull RPO. So as soon as I see backside pressure, I either throw whatever hot throw I gave him in the route or I hand the ball off. I'm not going to pull a late RPO throw because I know I'm going to get hit. And I teach it almost the same way you teach empty pass pro. Mm-hmm. A quarterback learns empty pass pro pretty quick because he knows where he's hot. And we teach that exact philosophy of this is where you're hot. If you get pressure, hand it off. And we've developed some guys, and I know it's next level thinking, is he's essentially still responsible for that blitz guy. So I've had a kid over the last couple of years that would ride it and wall the guy off because that's his guy. We can't block him. So when he starts understanding who his responsibility is and you've got a cue that can hand power off and get in the way of the blitzer because he understands the gap he's responsible for is when you're going to enjoy coaching that kid a little bit more.
Yeah, I love the way you're thinking about that. And adding the gap over here, subtracting here, like when you said that, makes complete sense. And to me, again, it goes back. That's a pretty simple thing to do. That's not difficult. As we sat here and you've talked about all these different RPOs, you're going to study it. You're going to know what they're doing. But you're not worried about, I got to teach them this coverage, that coverage, this nuance, and this coverage. They're going to do this or that. Like, things are going to happen. They have to happen a certain way. And when they do, here's your scenarios. And it limits what you really have to prepare for.
I mean, we still do our 8 to 10 progression read, drop back passing game.
Right.
But that's not who we are on first and second down. Mm-hmm. That's our 3rd and 7 answer. We're still going to teach our shots on first down. We truly want to throw a deep ball, a double post, all that. But when I'm teaching RPO quick game, I don't teach coverage anymore. I don't teach one high, two high. I teach space. You fix space. And the space changes based off the run scheme. So they have to understand the run scheme. I used to overcomplicate teaching the run scheme and almost attack it like an O-line coach has to teach inside gap, head up, climb the back. I don't need to teach quarterbacks that. I need to teach them in a simplified way. And the simplest way, like you just heard on gap scheme, I'm losing a gap over here. And when I'm losing a gap over here, that's a big problem. So trying to find ways and that math degree of creating formulas, creating easy ways for them to understand this space is what you're responsible for now. Fix the space. If there's nothing in that space, you hand the ball off. If there's something in that space, I will give you some type of option with some route that fixes that space.
So, Coach, as you were wrapping up, I was able to step in the room, and I did hear some of those questions. We talked about a few of those things here. But what were some of the things that came up, some questions where you're like, well, that's a good question.
I had an O-line guy in the room asking about when to push and when not. You're seeing these four eyes now. And the four eyes are forcing people to push more out of the box. Well, the RPO doesn't match up anymore. As soon as mm-hmm. you start pushing out, as soon as O-line are starting to block the D-gap player, it messes with the way you've taught your quarterback.
Right.
So we've had to change our rules of when to push. So unless we get an immediate threat where that guy's standing on the line, we don't push anymore. And we put it on our quarterback. So that was one good question. Another guy kind of asked about the pre and post snap side, and I simplified it to whatever side I turn you to is your post snap, because I don't like reading my back. I know there's some teams in the country that turn their back and try to read opposite of them. And I don't think that is a good spot I want to put my kid in.
Right.
So we can rule that up. Your back is your pre-snap. Your where I turn you to is your post-snap. And then as we talked about a lot in that session today, guys asked about back alignment. We do so much out of the pistol now.
Mm-hmm.
That way I could prevent the defense from knowing where the pre- and post-snap ride is going to be. So I'd say 60-70% of our run game is based out of the pistol. Now, we still do power read. We still do the buck sweep. We still do a lot of our run game that we're offset, and we RPO differently off
right.
of those things, but we still try to keep our rules. So I put things in rules for our QBs, and I try not to get out of that rule box that I give them.
With the power read, I remember you did answer a question about that, you know, power read. And we would leave the pistol, too, for power read. And I liked it, just to who we were. I mean, you could go a lot of jet motion and stuff like that. My thought was on jet motion and power read. I really got to spend time on that, making sure that mesh point is very precise in the timing, because that'll mess you up quick. So we ended up going more to we want that back running it. And even when we would bring our receiver was really good into the backfield, we'd have him almost get to a stop and get to where he'd be as a back, and then run it, just to, because I didn't have the time, I guess, to time on task for let's go and really get this good at the mesh point. And then is one of those things too, your centers affect everything. So if I had to go to my second center, now we're really screwed up. So power read, and I think I talked with Coach Bashaner at Minnesota State about power read and this exact point with the jet. But for you, is there anything you like with the play action? I know I've seen guys who have tried to RPO the power read. I think it's difficult because the quarterback now has to get his eyes in a lot of different places that don't, the vision line maybe not is there. So just your thoughts on complementing that power read.
You know, for us in the RPO world, I'm always a fixer. Right? My wife gets mad at me at the house because she wants to vent, and I'm a fixer. So I try to create answers, even though I don't always listen to what she's really saying. I'm just trying to create an answer. So power read for us is we're going to offset our back. We went away from pistol. We offset our back and go straight to it. But what hurts power read is front side pressure.
Yeah.
Two off the edge.
Yep.
With them having somebody for the pull and having somebody for the back. So for me, we put in RPO off of power read, not to throw it, but as an answer to the problem. Well, the problem for power read is front side pressure.
Yep.
So now we throw backside slants is our answer to power read. Anything else off the front side should be in a good situation. No, say I'm running to the field and that nickel Sam comes, I throw the backside slant. If he doesn't like the slant window pre-snap, he can give another option. And I kind of give him a toolbox now of here are your answers.
So for some reason he had an apex out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
We can run a hitch. Uh-huh. We can run a speed out.
Right.
One way or the other, you know front side pressure hurts power read, so you better fix it.
And for you, it's the immediate pressure. Someone walked up?
Or distance. If I'm in the – if as soon as I catch the snap, then I see it. Get your butt depth and get away from it and throw that backside answer.
So kind of like before, though, you're not going to sit where you're at right now. You need to do something with your feet.
I need to get the heck out of there.
Yeah, okay.
Get some depth.
Right, right.
It's almost like you teach your nakeds. Say mm-hmm. you're naked into a pressure. You tell them to abort the fake, get depth, and get it to your hot flat route or hot whatever. You kind of teach those hot throws the same way. Get your butt out of there so you get protected a little bit more and get some depth.
Yeah. With what's going on with the scheme now, is your guard turning into a trapper? Is he just going to pull and look to fit through that gap as normal? And how do you handle that part?
I think it just works out.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I fell into is he's pulling for the first linebacker in the box. And he's pulling for his inside pad for the out kick. And if he pulls and something runs into him, he's not going to pass it up. You know, you teach not pass up color. So if something comes so tight off that tackle's rear end, he ends up hitting it. We don't teach it that way.
Uh-huh.
He just ends up being a train wreck right there. So
yeah.
He takes the first hit off of him. So the only guy that's really hot is that outside pressure.
Got it. And And the running back in this, if he's not getting the ball, the quarterback pulls it, he sees the pressure coming, is he coached?
We haven't taught it. Yeah. We haven't taught him that way. I've had a kid at a previous school that was figured it out, and as soon as that pull happened and the same linebacker was standing there, he just made collision with it and hit it. I think it you could teach it that way, but we haven't done it. We haven't overcomplicated for that kid because I know there's a lot of guys that's probably going to listen to this podcast that kid that's playing that position for you is probably not your 4.0 scholar athlete. So we try not to overcomplicate that position.
Yeah. Well, Brent, some incredible stuff here, and it was great to have you out here at our national conference, and I really appreciate you taking the time to share with coaches both on this podcast as well as in your clinic talk.
I'm fired up. I'm about to go listen to some guys talk this afternoon.
Awesome.